Thank you, Lynn. Kelvin Blanchard, 34066, for Mr. Reynolds. What I'm asking the court today is to rule that the trial court abused its discretion by finding that there was proximate cause to charge Mr. Reynolds with restitution in the amount of over $300,000. Because that was not the basis of his conduct. The basis of his conduct came from fencing the 29 and a half feet, whatever it was, of copper cord for which he received a little over $1,000. The problem with the case is that at the guilty plea, the factual basis was waived. Nothing in the trial court record, other than the information, the basic charge that Mr. Reynolds was charged with, that by receiving, that became the factual basis of the case.
But in restitution cases, can't the court look at other related facts, information, et cetera, that's in the record to determine what the scope of the offense was? We do see that in other cases.
Sure, but the problem here is that when, at the restitution hearing, the bulk of the file was in the Court of Appeals.
Yeah, it was stolen, according to the judge. I think he meant we borrowed it.
Stolen, yes, you all stole it. Actually, I thought it was in my office.
He blamed us, huh?
So the judge did not have these documents at hand. So he claims, the judge claims he relied on his memory. And how can we...
Memory of what? Was he presiding at the plea agreement?
Correct.
But this, they waived the factual basis, so there was no...
Correct. Precisely.
All right, but there is a reference, I'm very confused about this, I must confess. There's a reference to an affidavit. It's either an arrest affidavit or a search warrant affidavit, I'm not sure which. But it apparently lays out kind of the offense that led to the discovery of stolen wire.
Correct. It lays out from a snitch first. It's a search warrant for a cell phone.
Okay.
And in the search warrant, the officer that wrote out the search warrant quotes information he received from a snitch.
Okay, let's just stop there a minute. The affidavit, the search warrant affidavit. Is it in our record? I couldn't find it. Is it in the record in the Court of Appeals? Or is it still in your office, maybe?
No. I think it's in my office.
No. Is it in the Court of Appeals record? Because I cannot find it. You assume it is, yes.
It's in the underlying case. The underlying case, not that was combined.
All right.
I requested be combined because...
The first appeal, okay. So it should be in our record?
Yes, sir.
Okay, second question. Did the judge at the restitution hearing have access to the affidavit?
No, because it was in my office.
Because that's what he said, the file was missing, that included that document?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead, get the picture.
I got a question about the affidavit, so I'm going to question vigorously about the affidavit. Assuming that there were allegations in the affidavit that implicated your defendant with the actual cutting of the wire, as opposed to just the receipt of the copper. And in his plea, all he admitted to was receipt of the wire. To what extent could or could not the judge take into consideration those allegations?
Well, the affidavit does not state. The snitch said, the police officer quoted the snitch as to have said that the brother, Frankie Reynolds, cut the wire. That's what's in the affidavit.
Right, but I guess if the defendant knew about it, he might, like in advance, he could be a complicitor. And so I'm just asking about what the contents of the affidavit might say as far as implicating the defendant in knowledge. And if it's from a snitch and it's not part of a guilty plea, to what extent can the judge consider it?
There's nothing in the affidavit that shows my client, Stephen Reynolds, knew anything about the cutting of the wire, was involved in the cutting of the wire, or cut the wire. The snitch says that Frankie, the brother, cut the wire. And that when the snitch says something about seeing Frankie and his brother together at a later point. I mean, can't family members be together? So.
Okay, I guess my next question is, what about after the fact? If the defendant, after the wire was cut, learned that his brother had cut it, can he then be held responsible for it, or is there a legal problem with that?
I think there's a legal problem with that. I mean, what your brother does on his own accord can't be attributed to you. If you know who the thief was, but yet you pick up this property and sell it, that's still theft by receiving. You weren't involved knowingly, actively. You didn't help the man cut the wire.
Right. Oh, I certainly agree as far as complicitor goes. However, I guess I'm asking, if the brother took the wire and sold it, knowing that it had been cut earlier that day or that week or whatever by his brother, could he then be held responsible because he took wire knowing that it had been the result of all this damage?
Well, that's assuming all this damage, that anyone knew of all this damage. I submit no one knew of all this damage, especially my client, Stephen. My answer is the same, I believe, to this new question, is that if theft by receiving implies my client knew this material was stolen. So, who stole it? We have no knowledge if my client knew who stole it. That's not in the record anywhere. So how my client can be responsible for someone's action after the fact, there's no legal basis for that.
Has anybody been charged with cutting the wire, destruction of public property, or whatever the offense would be for cutting down this wire?
Yes, the brother,
Frankie's
Frankie Reynolds, as far as I know.
Okay, so there's a charge pending against him, or there was a charge filed against him?
Yes.
And was Stephen charged as a complicit in that case?
No. No.
Okay.
He wasn't charged. This is the
problem. He's not even a named co-conspirator or something? No.
Well, no one said that at the guilty plea.
Okay.
Now, the prosecution is trying to say that at the restitution hearing, that they're co-defendants, but they were not charged as co-defendants.
But there was a charge filed in Jefferson County against Frankie Reynolds, and Stephen Reynolds was not charged in that case.
Correct.
And I assume that case alleges that he cut the wire, destroyed public property, and caused $300,000 in damage as a result.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So my argument is the judge is speculating that my client in some way knowingly assisted his brother. But that's pure speculation because that's not anywhere proven or alleged in the record. My client simply pled guilty by waiving the factual basis to theft by receiving.
Counsel, if the file was not before the trial court at the time of the restitution hearing, and the affidavit wasn't in front of the trial court at the time of the restitution hearing, would the appropriate remedy be to remand and send the file and the affidavit back to the trial court to consider?
Well, I would say no. The prosecution had their opportunity to present information. I would assume they would have a copy of this affidavit. They should have presented it, admitted it as evidence at the restitution hearing if they wanted the judge to rely on that information. At the restitution hearing, the only thing other than the man that testified about the actual damages that was presented, that was that the DA asked the judge to consider, was the fact that there was a guilty plea and that RTA was the victim. Those are the only two things the prosecution asked the judge to take judicial notice of.
So it was their burden of proof and they didn't meet it?
That's correct. So they lose. That's my argument, that they should not get a second bite at the apple, essentially was my argument. And thank you, reserve the rest of my time.
You have about 4.5 minutes left.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, may it please the court. My name is Gabriel Olivares, attorney registration number 45336, and I represent the people in this matter. In this case, the trial court found the defendant was complicit in the overall act of theft of copper wire at an RTD construction site.
Based on what?
Based on the record.
What in the record? Was this affidavit before the court?
It was in the record. It had been it's in the record and it had been sent to the Court of Appeals in case 12CA 147. The court indicated during the restitution hearing that he was very familiar with the facts of this case, and you know, to the extent that he could remember the facts, he would take judicial notice of the record. So presumably the court had review the record. He was this. It was the same judge at sentencing prior to the record being sent to the Court of Appeals. So presumably he had reviewed the entire record and was familiar with the facts underlying the case.
But the affidavit was not offered as an exhibit at the restitution hearing.
No, it was not.
Whatever the snitch supposedly said to the police officer was not argued by the district attorney to the court at the hearing.
No, the actual facts of the case were actually not really disputed. It was more the theory of culpability that was disputed at the case. The defendant never, at the restitution hearing, never challenged the facts, never challenged the court's factual findings. It just challenged the fact that whether the defendant was responsible for the full amount of damage or not.
When you say, Mr. Olivares, when you say he was complicit in the theft,
mm-hmm.
is there any support in the record that this defendant knew that the crime would be committed in advance and acted to promote or facilitate in advance of the crime?
No, and quite candidly, the prosecutor admitted at the restitution hearing that the defendant, that there was no evidence the defendant was involved prior to the cutting of the copper, that his involvement most likely began January 10th when his brother enlisted his help to retrieve the copper from the RTD site and then sell it, because his brother could not sell it himself. He had been banned from selling because he had sold stolen copper in the past.
Do you know of any cases that apply a complicity theory after the fact?
After the fact, no, but the defendant is more than just an accessory after the fact. He is... While his involvement may have come after the cutting of the copper, the act of theft was still ongoing when he became involved. The copper was still on the RTD site, and Frankie Reynolds needed his brother to retrieve.
But the $300,000 in damage had already been completed, right? Because as I understand your theory, snipping wire caused the damage.
That was the bulk of the right. damage, yes.
And the wire could have been there for 30 days or something like that, and then they went and picked it up and sold it, but the damage had been caused long before.
That's true.
And there's no evidence the defendant knew his brother was going to do it. He wasn't there when his brother did it. He didn't assist him in doing it. He just went and picked it up, and so that's why he was charged with theft by receiving and not complicit.
Yeah, there's no evidence on the record. That's correct.
Well, in the restitution hearing, it seems like people were kind of commingling the concepts of complicity and accessory after the fact. And it sounds like you've referenced both of those terms in your argument today. So could you clarify what exactly the theory of liability was for the defendant?
Well, the theory of liability that the trial court rested its ruling on was that the defendant was complicit in the overall act of theft, and that the criminal mischief, the cutting down of the wire, was just one part of that act of theft. The theft could not have occurred unless unless Frankie Reynolds had cut down the wire. The trial court basically ruled that you can't compartmentalize the criminal acts. You can't have criminal mischief on one hand and theft on the other. The criminal mischief was part and parcel of a larger act of theft, which the defendant was complicit in.
Okay, let me ask you this question. Let's say, this is a hypothetical, let's say that the defendant's brother had said to the defendant, hey, I know where there's this cut down or stolen copper wire, it's stolen, but I can't sell it, I need you to do it. And so they don't know who cut it down. It might have been the brother, might have been a friend, maybe he even represents that someone else cut it down. And the defendant said, yo, okay, I'll sell it. And so he gives him the copper wire. In that circumstance, how can he be held liable for the act of cutting the wire?
I think in that circumstance, the defendant is guilty of theft by receiving, not so much a complicit or in the theft itself. In this circumstance, the theft is still ongoing. Frankie Reynolds had not completed his act of theft. He came close, but he left the copper at the construction site. He needed his brother's help to...
Okay, what in the record shows that this defendant knew that his brother had cut the wire as opposed to a third person? All he pled guilty to was theft by receiving.
Certainly. Most of our facts do come from Gregory Palmer. And Mr. Palmer told the police that Frankie Reynolds had boasted to him that he had hit a gold mine. He climbed up this pole and cut down the copper wire. And Frankie Reynolds enlisted the help of Gregory Palmer to go retrieve the copper wire on January 10th. Now, when they got to the site, there was RTD employees there, so they boarded, went back to Mr. Palmer's house. Shortly after that, on the 10th, the defendant was seen leaving the scene, leaving Mr. Palmer's house with his brother in the blue pickup truck. Later that day, the defendant was selling the copper wire to C&M Iron in the blue pickup truck. So we know in that period of time that the defendant obtained possession of the copper wire. So I think it's not speculation to presume that Frankie Reynolds told his brother exactly the same thing he told Mr. Palmer, that he had hit a gold mine, and that they went to retrieve the copper wire, and then the defendant went and sold the copper wire.
Okay, so we're assuming because the defendant told Mr. Palmer that he cut the wire, that the defendant also told his brother that he cut the copper wire. Is that a correct mm-hmm. statement of what your position is?
The brother told the defendant
right.
that he...
The brother told Mr. Palmer, sorry about that, I'm getting all of the characters mixed up. So the brother tells Mr. Palmer he cut the wire, and therefore you're saying that he also, that means that the brother told the defendant that he had cut the wire.
Yes, I think we can presume that Frankie Reynolds was just as boastful to his brother as he was to Mr. Palmer.
So your theory is, if I now can restate it, the final act of theft occurred when the wire was carried off the RTD premises.
That's correct.
And defendant was involved in that with his brother. How do we know that? According to whom? Palmer didn't see it. He didn't testify to it. We're theorizing that he carried it off. We don't know that, right? The person at C&M Metal or whatever it's called said he showed up with the wire. But we don't know that he carried it off the premises, do we?
Certainly. We know that Frankie Reynolds needed help or was looking for help to retrieve the wire. It didn't sound like he had a vehicle. Gregory Palmer drove Frankie Reynolds to the site, and then later, after that failed, the defendant picked him up in the blue pickup truck, and they left. And then later on that same day, the defendant in the same pickup truck was selling the copper wire. So I don't think it's speculation to fill in the gap between those times. To say that Frankie Reynolds used his brother to go pick up the wire from the RTD construction site.
Let me ask you about this piece. I've seen in some cases where the plea agreement has joint and several liability, but we don't have that in this plea agreement. And and that wouldn't be a basis for upholding the restitution in this case. Is that right?
The defendant did not, I would agree that the defendant did not agree to join several liability as part of the restitution specifically. He did, or as part of the plea agreement specifically. He did agree to pay restitution, but not specifically join several liability, on the theory of joint several liability. But the court still found that the defendant was jointly and severally liable for the full amount of restitution. So, that is consistent with cases such as Fitchner that that look at complicity in the restitution context. In Fitchner, the court says each is responsible for the damage he caused and also the damage caused by the other.
But since Fitchner applied complicity, didn't that mean that the defendant would have to know in advance and have an intent to promote and facilitate?
I think it could be argued that Fitchner actually strengthens this argument, because in Fitchner, the complicitor's actions were unpredictable. He shot a shotgun at a truck, but the court found that even in that case, the defendant is liable for the acts of his co-defendant. In this case, the defendant knew what his brother had done. He knew that the wire had been cut down, and he still agreed to join him in completing the theft.
But I thought that the prosecutor agreed at the restitution hearing that the defendant, they didn't have any proof that the defendant knew his brother had cut.
Sorry, he knew what his brother had done before he agreed. There's no evidence he knew in advance, but he knew that his brother, what damage his brother had caused, and then still agreed to help him.
And what is that based on? Extending the affidavit to one more level.
It's assuming that that Frankie Reynolds told his brother the same thing he told Mr. Palmer, which again I don't believe is speculation that Frankie Reynolds would tell his brother the same thing he told this other person.
I assume the fact that the damage to the RTD's system was over with by the time they picked up the wire is not a relevant consideration in terms of proximate cause. It's sort of like it's like an advance clause, it's not an after the fact. Taking wire had nothing to do with causing that damage. If they left the wire there and never picked it up, the damage had been done.
But certainly, it's the damage that had already been done was just one part of the criminal act, the entire criminal act. And we know from the complicity theory that if you're complicit, you're not just culpable for part of the acts of you're culpable for all of the acts.
Well, so I guess the problem is that I'm questioning whether he was complicit. Because I think complicity, unless you have a case that says otherwise, my understanding is complicity requires advanced knowledge or intent to promote and facilitate. It's not after the fact knowledge.
Well,
correct me if I'm wrong, if you have a case that says complicity is after the fact, then I'd love to look at it. But I know of none.
No, and I would agree with you to a point. I don't think, again, that the defendant was a complicitor after the fact. He was a complicitor during the fact. He might have not been a complicitor before the fact, but definitely was a complicitor during the fact. This isn't Frank Reynolds showed up on his brother's doorstep with 150 feet of copper wire and said, "I really need you to sell this for me." This was him saying, "The copper wire is still the RTD site. I need you to help me retrieve it and then go sell it for me." And we know he did that. He sold 39 and a half feet of copper wire to CNM Metal and Iron. If the court has no further questions, I would ask that it would affirm the order of restitution. Thank you.
The theft was completed when Frankie cut the wire and moved it to a place that it wasn't before. The theft didn't require the movement from the RTD property to some other place.
Why? Doesn't it require permanently depriving the owner of the property, which if it had been left on the RTD property would not have been, I know it's out of place, it doesn't help anymore, it's cut that, but still, they still have the wire. They didn't steal the wire. It may be destruction of private property or I think criminal mischief, but it doesn't seem like it's a theft until they take the wire off the property.
Well, my recall said the movement of the property is the theft. If you break into a house and you move some things, put it in a pile, and police walk in, I mean, you would still be charged with theft.
Or burglary.
Or burglary. So I don't think the actual, I don't think the prosecution knows the actual location of that copper wire once it was cut and where it was put. I don't think prosecution knows that. All they know is that my client got the material and fenced it. So, as exactly where the Frankie put the cut wire,
well, you're, you're disregarding Palmer's statements to the police. Palmer said they went to get the RTD workers there and they left. Later in the day, the wire apparently was taken, we don't know, either by Frankie and somebody else, or Frankie by himself, or Frankie and the defendant. We have to theorize on that, according to the state.
Correct.
But we know it was left there on the RTD property until sometime later that day, I think.
Well, I think our snitch, Mr. whatever his name is, Palmer, said the RTD, our guards were around. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that the wire was on RTD property.
But do you agree, for hypothetical purposes, that if it were still on the RTD property, that from a complicitor theory standpoint, that the act of going back onto the property with knowledge that it had been cut would be in furtherance of the criminal act?
No, I'm saying that the theft occurred when the material was cut and it was moved to a different location. I don't believe it makes any difference if it was still on RTD's property or not, and I don't think there's a sufficient factual basis given to us by the snitch to know where this property was placed by Frankie after he cut the wire.
Okay.
And this Fitchner case, these two or three multiple individuals went to a location to commit mayhem. I forgot what it was. And one of these individuals did the shooting. And the Supreme Court said both all the individuals that went to the location to commit mayhem were co-defendants and responsible. Other than that, nothing else. Any questions? Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thanks to both counsel for your very helpful arguments. The case will stand submitted and an opinion will issue in due course.